Hello, this is 91.7 WHUS Stores, Connecticut, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's September 28th, 2016, and I'd like to welcome you to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you would like to contribute, please call or text at 860-486-9487. Or if you're listening to this on a podcast or you want to contact us by email, you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. So anyway, we're going to start this one out with Ron's rant of the day. My name is Ron, otherwise known as Pedalin' Ron. And I am, of course, also the self-proclaimed ambassador of cycling. And that's where my rant is going to go today. My rant is going to go to ambassadorship. So ambassadorship, why would I rant about ambassadorship? Because I had this lovely ride this weekend, great ride. I rode with the lovely Fran Storch and also Amber Pierce, our local professional bicycle racer who lives here in Mansfield. And I happened to notice something that Amber is just so incredibly good at. And this is why I know this doesn't sound like a rant, but it will turn that direction. Anyway, when she sees a car or someone who is being courteous or kind to us, she's so quick to wave to them and acknowledge them for their kindness on the road. And here's where the rant comes in. I also do this. I'm really big on it. I will say hello to people as I'm riding by when they're out working in their yards, you know, planting flowers or whatever they are doing. And when I ride by, I always make sure I say, hello, how are you today? What a beautiful day. And all that's called being a good ambassador to cycling, because the message that you are sending out to the people that are working in their yards or driving their vehicles is that cyclists are good, that we're actual people. It identifies us, it humanizes us, and it lets them know that we're not just an object of contention for them when they're out driving their car. So this is a really, really good thing. What drives me crazy? Why am I going from here to rant? Here's why I'm going from here to rant. Because there are so many people who ride bikes that are out there that are terrible ambassadors. And so my rant of the day is going to be terrible ambassadors. That's, I don't know how else to say it. I am, you know, it doesn't take a lot to just recognize the good drivers, the good people on the side of the road. Remember, the people on the side of the road that are out in their yards, maybe they're going out to their mailbox to get their mail or their paper. Maybe they're just, you know, out walking around looking at how the flower bed's growing. I don't know. Maybe they're raking leaves on the side of the road, because yes, it is fall. We're getting towards that time of year where we're going to be raking some leaves here real soon. The fact is that when they're not doing that, they are probably behind the wheel of a motorized vehicle. So it's really, really important to recognize them and to be nice to them. It's not a difficult thing to do. And the message that you send when you're doing that is that people on bicycles are really friendly and they're really nice, and I'm going to give them a little more consideration the next time I'm out driving my motorized vehicle. So my rant of the day is bad ambassadors. If you're a bad ambassador and this is your thing where you just put your head down and your nose up in the air and you don't care about anybody else but yourself when you're out riding your bike, time to make a change there. I do not like that at all, and I would like you to just think about it. Think about it not just for yourself, but think of it for your cycling community. And that's the key here. We want to be able to say or create a very good image for our cycling community, because once we do that, then we all are much, much safer on the road. So that's my rant of the day. I just drives me crazy when I see people that are terrible ambassadors, and it's time to pay attention to that. So since we are on the subject of bicycle, of cycling ambassadors, I pulled up a few different things to talk about. There's one that is, there's a bicycle shop in Portland, Oregon, which is widely seen as a counterculture cycling nirvana in the automobile-loving U.S. And they launched an initiative called 21 Ambassadors. And this is their mission statement, and I'm going to read this quote-unquote. And this is, to ride a bicycle is to be part of a community, to share a common experience as much as it is about good health and helping the environment. We believe that as a community, we should support each other in bad times as well as good. We, the 21 Ambassadors, are here to help you. When tires are flat and spokes break, when chains fail and gears groan, when you need a hand, we hope to be there to assist. So that's unquote. So that's from a group out in Portland, Oregon, which if you've ever been to Portland, Oregon, it is a very strong cycling community. There's a lot to offer out there. Yay, Portland. Big thumbs up for Portland.
What's Portland?
What's Portland? What do you mean, what's Portland?
I've never been there.
Oh, my God.
Portland, Oregon.
You were there for 4 years. You went to naturopathic college there. Come on. Come on now. So anyway, if you
have... Keep Portland weird!
Keep Portland weird. And that's okay. And that's a good thing. And that's where all the weird people are that ride bikes, because that is how we are classified sometimes as weird people when we ride our bikes, which is a silly thing because, to me, the weird people are the ones that are driving their cars when they could be out riding their bikes. You know, I mean, think about this. You could be riding your bike. Why are you driving your car 1 mile to go down to the convenience store or the grocery store to pick up a few things and then driving your car back? Ride your bike. Why not ride your bike? What a great thing. You'll see more. You'll hear more. You'll smell more. You'll actually get the smells and sights of your surroundings. It's a good thing. So anyway, a kind of cross between different types of being an ambassadorship. You look at this, to stop and offer assistance to fellow cyclists. Now, I could do a rant on this one, but I'm already ranted today, so I'm not ranted out because I have lots of them. But I was on a ride once. I was riding with a large group of cyclists that were all from a specific club, and we were riding down the road. And we were on a very large organized ride. It was the Steeplechase, actually, our local big charity ride that we have right here in Tolland and Windham counties. And anyway, someone got a flat tire. Now, the person that got the flat tire was not with our group. This person was pulled over on the side of the road, and there were two of them there, and they were both looking at their bike with... not going to say curiosity. It was more like, oh my God, what do I do? You know, anticipation of, oh, I've got this flat tire. What am I going to do? And so I announced to the group I was with, we've got a flat tire here. I'm going to pull over and assist. And my group, other than the few people that were with me, and I think Fran was one of those people that was with me at that time, my group just left. They left in their club colors, showing off who they were. And they left this person on the side of the road. I got off, and I asked them if they needed help. And they said, we have a flat tire. And I said, do you have a spare tube with you? And they said, yes. I said, do you have a pump? Do you have tire levers? They said, yes, we do, but we really don't know how to use them. And so I said, let me give you a clinic. And so that's what I did. I showed them how to, it was a rear wheel, which can be very confusing because of the gears in the back, even though it's really not confusing once you practice. But anyway... I showed them how to shift the bicycle all the way down into the hardest pedaling gear in the back. I showed them how to separate the brakes. I pulled the wheel off. I showed them how to take the tire off the rim, and also showed them how to look for the place that the puncture may have occurred or the flat may have occurred so that they won't have that problem the next time. So we went through the whole tutorial of how to change a flat tire, put them all back together again, pumped their tire up, gave them a push, and they were on their way. That, folks, is being a good ambassador. And yes, you're helping a fellow cyclist. That's a wonderful thing. So that's a big one. To follow all the rules of the roads and set the standard for exemplary riding behavior. Yes. And here's another one. That's a big one. And also, again, these can all turn into rants. But we're not going to rant. We're just going to say, you want to be a good ambassador? Stop at a stop sign. You know, stop at the traffic lights. Use your hands to signal what direction you're going. Be a responsible vehicle on the road. And then there's another one here. It says to carry their road aid kit with them on all rides. Road aid. I don't know if that's particularly first aid, but I do believe it's probably things like keeping your spare bag filled up with spare tube, tire levers, maybe some patches if you need them. I always carry a chain kit with me too, and a spoke wrench. So just in case someone breaks a chain, I can actually repair a chain on the road for them and get them on their way. This is important stuff. This is all part of being an ambassador to cycling, and it's something that I think we all need to pay a lot closer attention to. It's only going to make the path clearer for those behind us, and that's what you really have to look at. Anyway, there's, you know, another quote from another rider. Being a biker my whole life, I know there's always conflict between bikes and cars. People are always looking to point the finger. So to me, the only way for a cyclist to gain respect is to behave as if they'd want cars to behave. If you're a driver at a stop sign and some cyclist blows by you, that becomes unfair. It is the law to stop, after all. Okay, there it is. Paying attention to the rules of the road, remembering that you are a vehicle. These are key components to being a good ambassador of cycling. It's something that I see violated a lot. And one of the things that I am always preaching about, as anyone who has ever ridden with me, you know I do like to preach. You don't get respect until you give it. So remember, if you're looking for respect, if you're all upset because, you know, that car did this and that person in the car did this and that person in the truck did that, and you get all upset about it, what have you done to show them, teach them, educate them to the fact that bicycles are good and that we belong out there with them? And it certainly isn't using a bad gesture, let's say, a physical gesture. You do not want to do that. So, you know, think about responsible riding. It's just safer for everyone. You know, if you have a chance to use a bike lane, it keeps it keeps everyone out of each other's way and out of harm's way. It's a great thing. The bike share communities that you see in New York and in Boston and Chicago are really great because, you know, they're really educating those that do not ride bicycles of what's going on out there in our world. So anyway, ambassadorship, think about it. Think about it all the time. The thing that you must remember is whatever message you are sending out there, you're sending to all of us. So if you're doing something bad, if you're running stop signs, if you're running through red lights, if you're using improper gestures, then you have to realize that is a message that is being sent to the driver of that vehicle or the person driving the car, that is, all cyclists are bad. So all it takes is one bad apple to spoil the bunch, so to speak. So you remember, you're an ambassador. You're ambassadors. You need to be out there as an ambassador, and you need to pay attention to that so that you can educate those, and we'll all get better because of it, and our environment will be much, much better because of it too. So anyway, the thing to do is be a proper cycle ambassador. So that's one little thing that I wanted to cover today. Do we have a call, friend?
Yes, we have a caller. It's Michael from Eastford who wants to talk about bicycle ambassadorship.
Yay. Is this the Michael from Eastford that was a commuter going into East Hartford a long time ago?
Good memory.
How about that? Well, you're iconic. You're one of my shows. So, you know, it's yes. So, hi, Michael. How you doing?
I am doing quite well. How are you today?
I'm doing great, thanks. Thank you so much for calling us.
Well, I'd like to make a comment about bicycle ambassadorship.
Yay.
Having been a long-term cyclist myself, many, many, many decades, we really do need to improve our game as cyclists, for sure.
Oh, we sure do.
I recently tried doing a ride with a local group from north of the border here.
Okay.
And we're coming down the road, and this large group thought nothing of being 4, 5, 6 wide on the road, taking up the complete lanes, and when cars would come, doing nothing to move over.
Oh, that's bad.
You know, maybe compressing a little bit, and to the point where some of the drivers were getting very, very angry, laying on the horns, swearing at the riders, and personally, they were right.
Sure they were.
You know, we really need to follow the rules of the road, for sure.
Right, and in the state of Connecticut, just to verify the rules, if it's a big, wide road, which I'm going to guess it might have been 198 or something
yes,
like
was.
That. Okay, and I think I know who that group is, and I can actually address them, but we'll talk about that another time. If it is a wide road like that, and you have 200 feet of view both to the front and to the rear in the state of Connecticut, you can ride legally 2 abreast,
mm-hmm.
okay, but not 4. Not 3, not 4, not 5. So you don't clutter the road. And you ride responsibly at 2 abreast. And that is the law. That is a legal issue. But you're right. When they're spread all over the road, all they do is send a bad message. And we try to figure out why you know, there are those out there that basically hate us because of the way that we congest the roads. And they have rights to that. So anyway, so you rode with this group, and they were not being responsible.
Right. I only rode with them for a little while because I just found it so upsetting that they were hogging the road that I really didn't want to be part of it.
Right.
I didn't want to have anything to do with them because I don't want to be identified as one of those kinds of riders. And I actually went up to the organizer of the rider a couple of days later and had expressed my views. He was very sympathetic, but I didn't get the feeling, frankly, that anything was really going to be done about it. Because here we are on these rural roads and blah, blah, blah.
And that ride gets, I spoke with them, that particular group, about a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, actually, before I went to Interbike. And they'd get up to 60 riders on that ride.
Yes, this particular night they had 62, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, they've done a great job in building that bicycle culture up there, but that is something that certainly needs to be addressed. And I can address it from the direction of that. I got a caller who was driving a vehicle and was really upset with a group that happened to be from that area. I have ways of twisting this.
Oh, that's good.
So I will certainly let them know because it is upsetting because they're sending a message that we don't want to be part of. And that really bothers me when someone does that. So anyway, so you've been riding all summer? You're having a good summer?
Oh, yes. Been doing a lot of riding.
Yeah.
Recently,
well,
I came across something which, again, ties in with the respect aspect. You probably have seen something that the state has done as a safety issue, which I'm finding is having a big effect on me as a cyclist. And that is, if you've ridden on Route 74 between Route 84 and Tallinn Center,
okay.
And Route 198 from the intersection of 197 to the state line, the state has dug out rumble strips on the center double yellow line.
Oh, good idea.
The whole idea being that this would be a disincentive for drivers to pass, and it works really, really well.
Yes.
The problem is that I, as a cyclist on the road, whereas before, especially on 198, I have a blinky on the back, a nice bright 101 water. The drivers would be very courteous, and I like riding on that road because they would pull way over, sometimes all four wheels over the double yellow line.
Right.
Now with the rumble strips, because they're so deep, it works. They don't want to pull over.
Right.
And so they're in sections of 198, there are times when the shoulder gets very, very narrow, and I don't like to ride on the shoulder anyways because of all the glass that's on there these days.
Sure.
So all of a sudden, now people who are being courteous, they're coming right by me within 3 feet of me.
Oh, well, that's not good. That's not good at all. Because obviously the law is 3 feet. That's been established for a number of years now, although no one knows about it because we don't have a very good information system to the drivers of motorized vehicles in the state. But that's another rant for another day. But there is also a law that was passed a year ago this past July that said that the cyclist is to stay as far to the right as safely possible as per deemed by the cyclist. So this is the decision the cyclist makes. So if you're riding to the right side of the road and you see a pile of glass coming up, or you see a pothole or something that you need to avoid, you have the right to move out into the road to avoid that because you want to be as safe as you possibly can. There's two parts to this law. Okay, the second part to the law, which was a big issue, and of course, once again, no one knows about it because unless you're informed as a motor vehicle driver, you would never know this, is that the driver of the vehicle, of the motorized vehicle that is passing the cyclist, is completely legal to go out into the center of the road and pass. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. And that's where you run into the problem that you have with the rumble strip. And, you know, the rumble strip, of course, identifies the center of that road, which makes them even more aware of it. But it is legal for them to, if they are coming around a cyclist, it is very legal for them to cross over that center line and get out into the middle of the road without any fear of penalty or crime.
Well, the rumble strip is making that very challenging for drivers. I don't know if you've had the opportunity to encounter these rumble strips, but they're very deep, and I certainly don't want to drive my wheels over these things.
No.
I'm wondering if there's some way the state can, this is an unintended consequence. I understand why they did it. It's a great idea to keep people from passing in no-passing zones, but there's an unintended consequence for pedestrians, cyclists, and moped riders.
Right.
That I really think needs to be considered. I don't know if there's an advocacy group that could discuss this with the Department of Transportation, but something I really do think needs to be done before there's an incident that nobody wants to have happen.
Right, and there is a group. There's a group called Connecticut Bike Walk, and they can be, you know, you can get to them by going to their webpage, and it's ConnecticutBikeWalk.org, and they are an advocacy group that is based in the Hartford area. And as a matter of fact, I think they have an annual mini meeting and dinner coming up in usually November. So that might be something you would like to attend also, but you can look it up on their online website and see what's going on there. And you'll see a lot of like-minded people that are, you know, obviously as active on their bike as you are and also as concerned as you are. But it is something that they are always trying to push for changing laws or creating, identifying laws and situations that will make cycling safer. I will run it right by them. I know a bunch of people there, and I will mention to them about this conversation. Plus, I also know that the treasurer of that organization is a weekly podcast listener. He loves to listen to this. So that's been kind of a nice thing. Shout out to Scott. You know, he'll, that's a just a little yell out there. But that might be something that should be discussed maybe at their next board meeting, something about this. So you said Route 198 and Route 74 are the two
yep.
roads of issue here?
198 from the intersection of 197 to the Connecticut border
right.
Has this rumble strip.
Sure.
And 74 from the I-84 interchange at exit 69 to Tolland Center, the Tolland Green, has it also.
Well, that's interesting. I wonder if just even the signage, I mean, I'm thinking of the inexpensive ways to get the point across, and even a signage that would say it is okay to cross the center line when passing bicycles or pedestrians.
Even if it's there, I these rumble strips are so fierce.
Ooh.
There are many people that are just not going to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
The situation I've had, I mean, people who have large, wide tires that can float over those rumble strips
right.
really easily, but somebody who's running, you know, an old 13-inch wheel or 15-inch wheel with narrow tires,
right.
that's pretty violent what happens.
So this is deadly by design issue is what it is. That's a thing that when I was on the Connecticut Bicycle Coalition years ago, there was an actual booklet that was produced by that group or the head of that group that was called Deadly by Design, and it basically identified all the things the DOT is doing wrong for bicycles, and including dangerous intersections, you know, widening intersections, not using roundabouts or traffic circles where they could be far safer and increased flows of traffic, different things like that. But we have a particular deadly by design on Route 6 going into Willimantic if you're coming in from the east. And you've got a four-lane road and with just a center line on it, and that four-lane road turns into a major access highway that does not allow bicycles, does not allow pedestrians, does not allow horses, you know, the standard sign that you would see on an entrance ramp of a highway. But there, the road also goes straight there.
Yeah, so if you're
on a bicycle, you have to cross two lanes of traffic that are both accelerating to 65 miles per hour in order to get across that. So that is another classic deadly by design issue that there was no real forethought of, well, what happens if someone's on a bike or there's a pedestrian there? There's no sidewalk. There's no place for anybody to go. There's no bike lane. There's no indication to beware of cyclists, that sort of thing. And boy, these rumble strips sound like they're right on the top of the list.
I would go out of my way to go out and take a look at them.
Yeah, I will. Oh, I'll totally check that out. That's really because that's not very far from home, so we can certainly check and see what's going on there. That's very unfortunate. So if you are in the business of designing roads and pathways for vehicles in the state of Connecticut and happen to be listening to this, you might want to consider these things when you're making your design, because these are things that, like, you and I see this all the time because we're riding our bikes. And so, but it's not very, you're not aware of it if you're driving a motorized vehicle. You know, it's like, you know, smelling flowers when you go by on the road. You're not going to be aware of that when you're driving your vehicle because your windows are going to be rolled up, so you're not going to smell the flowers. But as a cyclist, we become much more aware of our surroundings and environment. And boy, that's a big one. I will certainly drop a piece of information to the Connecticut Bike Walk folks on this. And again, I know that my friend Scott is listening, and he will get the message on this. But that's a really good thing to bring up. I really appreciate your calling and telling me about that. So what else is going on with you? Anything else exciting?
Just riding.
Yeah.
Enjoying the weather.
So I have a piece of information for you. I was driving into Hartford on I-84 a few weeks ago, and I looked over by the movie theaters, and guess what's finished? The bike lane.
Really?
Yes, really. So the connecting piece where you were coming in on the Charter Oak Trail, mm-hmm. all right, and then it turned you and you went over and you ended up on Forbes Street. You now avoid that, and you will be able to. It actually comes right through. There's, you know, those big wooden sound barriers that they build on the side of the highway? It comes right through there, and now you're right on the edge of I-84, and there's a paved bike lane that's running parallel to I-84 heading into Hartford. And I think it goes all the way to Pratt & Whitney's property, because I believe that was the one obstacle that they had not yet overcome. And the Pratt & Whitney was being stubborn about donating or allowing the access on their land to let the bike path go through. I'm sure that will get negotiated out eventually, and we won't have that problem. But it's certainly something that, especially knowing the number of engineers that ride their bicycles to work at Pratt & Whitney, you would think that it would be a personal concern of theirs.
For sure.
But I think they have some, you know, homeland security issues, and so they worry about bicycles coming on their property or whatever. Who knows? A fence can change a lot. There are simple solutions to what appear to be major problems for some people. But anyway, once that gets completed, that would put it through Pratt & Whitney's property, and then you would be getting very, very close to Main Street, East Hartford, and, you know, finishing, you know, the point from A to B is going to be much, much easier to get into downtown Hartford. So we may have very soon a major artery completely open going into downtown Hartford from the east, which is really exciting. Now we just have to work a little bit more on the west, although the west has the bus lane coming out of New Britain. So we have that. There's really not anything coming from the north or the south at this time, but that needs to happen because it's Hartford. A lot of people work in Hartford. And you would think that having arteries into Hartford would be an important piece. Also, on the other end, I have not yet explored it, but I know that there was a lot of construction going on up on the other end, moving the Charter Oak Trail closer to the Hop River Trail. So, of course, now you don't use it anymore because you're retired and you have this wonderful luxury of just being able to go ride your bike whenever you want.
So I have occasion to use these things.
Okay. All right. But I remember when you had called the last time, you were talking about how do you get into Hartford and safely.
There are certain blockages, especially in Manchester. I mean, there are ways to do it, but there are certain arteries where you can't take a direct route. You can take very circuitous routes.
Right.
For most people, you know, most people are under a time crunch in their life if they're working. And,
right.
You know, you've got to save time wherever you can, and the most direct route is the quickest route.
Right, exactly. Well, I heard tell that there was some sort of a talk of connecting the airline trail, which not the airline trail, the Hop River Trail, which brings you into Manchester and also brings you into Vernon, and connecting that over to the Charter Oak Trail somehow. But I don't know what the future is on that. But that would be another way that you could, without going through Bolton Notch and going through the new piece they're working on up at the top of Bolton Notch. But hopefully eventually on the other end of that, that'll happen too, which will be kind of nice. But
a source point for looking at future planning in those regards, I don't know if you've ever looked at the NEC future site from U.S. government, the Northeast Corridor plan.
No, I haven't. What is it called?
25-year plan on creating new corridors within the Northeast Corridor, new train corridors, bicycle paths.
Really?
All kinds of. It's an extensive website. It's NEC Future.
So NEC?
Yep, like as in Northeast Corridor Future. Okay. And they were looking for feedback from the public. I had written extensively to them during the feedback time that they were looking. They might still be looking for feedback.
Well, that's interesting.
This plan that's going forward is pretty massive. It's a long-term plan. Hopefully I'll live long enough to see it. But it incorporates existing corridors that were once train corridors, such as the Hop River
Trail.
And
yeah.
Establishing them as multi-use, they have a specific term. It's actually a combination of something that can be used by bicycles, pedestrians, multi-use trail, but also putting in transit systems.
Wow, I'm going to have to take a look at this. This could make some interesting information for another show. That's great.
There's extensive maps and plans, and it's really quite amazing. Of course, it's going to require funding, and who knows where that'll go with the government. But there are some very interesting things that are proposed on that website.
Right. You know how much less expensive it is to build a bike path than it is to build a road?
Oh, for sure.
It just seems like, you know, obviously we are tainted because we love bicycles and we understand the whole point in bicycles. But it's kind of a no-brainer. And it's also, you know, one of the things that I had noticed when I was out at Interbike last week at the bike show is there are an enormous number of companies that are now offering e-bikes. And e-bikes are, I know that they're just an incredible thing in Europe, that e-bikes have become a really big deal. And if you have an electric assist bicycle, it kind of kills the argument of I can't really ride my bike to work because I can't get over the hill on my road.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes care of that problem, and you know, you can go into work, and if you used up your battery on your way to work, you just plug in when you get to work and it's all charged up by the time you want to go home. So it seems to me that the future of e-bikes will also develop our trails at a higher rate too, because
I'm hoping there will also be an incentive for many of these trails to be paved.
Yes.
Because when I was commuting from exit 67 on Route 84 into East Hartford, I would utilize it's the Hop River Trail.
Correct.
The day after a rainstorm, or even 2 days after a rainstorm, it still wasn't really usable.
Yeah, it's a little messy.
Yeah
you still have puddling.
Where sand comes over and it's just not a kind environment to go cycling in.
Sure.
It's slow.
Yeah, well, it is a little slower. It is, for sure. But it's safe.
For sure.
You know, you're at least protected from the cars, and that's a good thing. So, anyway, do you have any plans coming up of future rides or any advocacy ideas or anything like that?
Well, mostly I'm switching into hiking season at this point, and hoping to go to the Builder's Ball on Friday night.
Oh, I was going to mention that a little later in the show. Thank you. That's great. Yeah, the Builder's Ball is really cool. Did you catch the episode a few weeks ago? I had Eric Weiss on from the Builder's Ball.
Yeah.
And he talked all about it, and it is this Friday, and we will segue into that in a little bit. It is also during the KMC Crossfest, which is another enormous event. If you've never seen that, that's kind of a cool thing too.
No, I haven't, and I'm looking forward to going to
some. Oh, you have to go. It's in our corner. It's right here. So it's a really great thing because it's in northeastern Connecticut. So it's very, very nice.
Good excuse for a ride.
Anything is a great excuse for a ride, isn't it?
For sure.
It's a great excuse for a ride if you've never seen the covered bridge in Brooklyn, Connecticut.
No, I haven't.
Fitzgerald Road. Look it up, find it, and ride to it. It's not that far from you. We were there on Sunday. So I have a ride that I like to lead called the Two Bridges Ride. And the Two Bridges Ride is that's one of the two bridges. The first bridge is you go by the bridge, and the bridge was actually the original old bridge on Jericho Road in Pomfret, Connecticut.
Hmm.
And the original bridge, it sits down and low off of Jericho Road, and it goes over a fairly viable stream. And what they did was they built three stone walls, one in the center of the stream and one on each edge, and they put these enormous slab rocks down on top of them.
Slab bridges are so cool.
And that was the bridge. And that was the bridge until about 1930. And then when they built the road up and put the big pipes underneath, then they, you know, no longer used it. So, but I love to bring people by that because no one knows it's there. It's like one of those things that you see when you're on your bicycle. You just don't realize it until you're on a bicycle and you look over and go, oh my God, look at that. That's really cool. So another good reason to ride your bike,
that's
right?
That's a good one. I'll have to try that one.
Yeah. So anyway, if you are looking for the Two Bridges Ride and you have an affiliation or can connect to ridewithgps.com, you can just look up Two Bridges Ride. It's a public route from our house, and you can at least incorporate some of the roads in and see where it goes.
Have to give that one a try.
And it's gorgeous. It's just the roads out there. It's we stop at a local restaurant, cafe in Pomfret, which everybody knows about.
Oh yeah.
You stop there and have a black bean brownie or a cup of coffee or something, and then move on. And there's a road off of Route 169 called Grosvenor Road. It's the road that, I don't know if you're familiar with Pomfret at all, but a church burned down there a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
And it's right, that's the road right there.
And
that's what I like to call worth the price of admission. So it's a screaming downhill with hard rights and hard lefts, and a hard left that just doesn't want to quit. So you should approach it with caution the first time you go down. But then once you have learned how to negotiate the turn, mindless abandon's a lot more fun.
You know, it's funny. I've never gone down that route. I've come up it several times.
Oh, really?
But
no
I've
kidding.
Never gone down it.
So you've come up it from Wright's Crossing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a nice climb.
Oh, it's a good climb. Yeah. Oh, you got to go down it. You got to go the other way. The other way is just, you know, it's what it's all about. Put a big smile on your face. And so anyway, you know, we were out in that direction, but that's what we used that road to get over to Wright's Crossing and then bring us over to eventually the covered bridge. So get out and explore, check it out, see what you think, and keep riding your bike.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call, and keep going on this ambassadorship thing, because it's very important.
I think it is.
Really need to clear up the feelings between cyclists and drivers.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I have a gentleman coming on in a few weeks that is going to be talking about his pack tour. He did one of those pack tours across the country where they carry everything for you, and he rode his bike. I announced him all summer long. Well, for the 31 days he was riding his bike. And he has agreed. I saw him in my spin class this morning, and he has agreed to come on the show and talk about his tour, but he also wants to talk a lot about bicycle safety on the road. So, which is great, you know. It's and that's all part of the whole, you know, advocacy and the ambassadorship thing too, because he's, you know, got a pretty strong believer in it. So anyway, it was great talking with you. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for calling in. And if you think of anything else you want to talk to us about, please give us a call anytime. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And keep the show going. Love both you and Fran.
All right. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
All right. So there we go. Yes, we have listeners. This is great. This is a cool thing. Well, we have a lot of listeners. Actually, I'm starting to see a lot of hits on podcast, on the iTunes podcast, which is kind of cool. And yeah, we're just spreading the good word. I had one of my cohorts come up to me last week when I was broadcasting live from Interbike, and he kind of looked at me funny, and then he realized that I was obviously having some sort of a conversation on my phone. And he came up to me afterwards and he said, "What were you doing on your phone there? What were you were talking all about the bike show?" And I said, "Well, I was broadcasting live from Interbike." And he just looked at me and shook his head and went, "That's so cool, Ron." And it is cool. It's kind of a fun thing we can do. It's too bad we're not going to be around this weekend, because I could have done something from the KMC Crossfest. But that's okay. You know, we'll come up with other ideas at other times. Moving on to the KMC Crossfest, I want to talk about it. It's one of the largest cyclocross races in the United States. And it used to be in Providence, Rhode Island, in Roger Williams Park. But their costs got a little bit out of control there, so they decided to look for a different venue for it. And I know that the promoter has been looking at Hartford for a long time, because I've been in a lot of conversation with him, because I put on a cross race in Hartford. But they decided that the Speedway up in Thompson, where it's an automobile speedway, a racetrack, has a lot of property with it, has lots of room for parking, and that is where the CrossFest is going to be. It's going to be in Thompson, or West Thompson, Connecticut, East Thompson, somewhere there. Anyway, it's the KMC CrossFest. Why am I telling you about this? Because if you've never seen this, if you've never gone to a really big cyclocross race, you're missing something. Great entertainment value here. It's huge. If you're listening to this on podcast and you missed it, there are others. There's one in Gloucester, Massachusetts, which is coming up shortly afterwards. There are also big UCI CrossFest races like this across the country. So if you're listening from somewhere across the country, go look at your cyclocross scene. See what's going on. I think you'll find it very, very entertaining. It's kind of amazing how the skill level of these cyclists has improved over the years. So that's a really neat thing. If you're, and you can spend a good part of the day there. There's lots of things to see. There are vendors there that are showing their wares. There's, you know, there's food, there's excitement. And of course, watching the races, it's great. It's just a great thing. The night before, on Friday night, will be the New England Builders Ball. And of course, you can reach that by going to newenglandbuildersball.com. And we had Eric Weiss on a couple of weeks ago talking about the Builders Ball. It's really, if you're a bike geek, I'm just throwing this reminder out there because I just am fascinated by this stuff. It's the Builders Ball features a number of custom frame builders, hand-built bikes. There are, I'm looking down the list here, and wow, there's just a whole bunch, including the Bamboo bicycles out of Boston. Yes, they make bicycles out of bamboo. Got that? Pretty cool, huh? There's, just looking to see if there's anything in here. I believe that there's going to be, our local folks from Horse Engineering, they sell cyclocross spikes that you put in the bottom of your shoes when you're racing your bike. When you run up really, really steep embankments, it's nice to have a set of spikes in the front of your shoes so they grab when you're running up the hill. My old friend, Peter Weigel, is going to be there. And Peter, I used to paint Peter's frames many, many years ago. Richard Sachs, who I also used to paint his frames many years ago. They're both out of the Connecticut region. One is from Lyme, Connecticut. The other is from Deep River, Connecticut. And they are custom frame builders. There are many custom frame builders there. You will see some of the most beautiful bicycles you've ever seen. And they're lots of them are steel builders, although we do have a bamboo builder there. Parley Cycles is a carbon builder. There's Hot Tubes is going to be there. They do builds and also frame repair, and they also paint bicycles. There's just so many great things to see. So highly, highly, highly recommend the New England Builders Ball. It's it's a bit of a party also. When you get there, you'll meet lots of people that are very like-minded. There, many of them are there to go to the cross race. And so they're just kind of looking for something to do at night after the race is over. And they are, it's the region's only hand-built bike show. So it's a really cool thing. It's September 30th, 2016. It's at 7 p.m. And it's at the barn at Thompson Speedway Motorsports Park in Thompson, Connecticut. So you want to check that out. It's worth it. It's certainly worth it. I know I had a few friends that showed up last year to the Builders Ball, or 2 years ago at the Builders Ball when it was out in Providence, and I ran into them at the ball, and they were, one of them is he's an engineer, or as we love to call them, engineered, and he just and a bike guy or bike geek, however you want to put it. And he was just a kid in a candy store. He's just drooling over the bikes and looking at them very closely and talking to the builders and getting, you know, firsthand information of what it's like to build a bike and different characteristics that the bike offers depending on the tubing used. And if you're want to learn a little bit more about the hand built shows and what goes on there, you definitely need to go to the New England Builders Ball on Friday evening. And it's at the Thompson Motorsport Speedway in Thompson, Connecticut. So check that out, and also check out the cross race, the KMC Crossfest this weekend. Those are two big things going on in the area that I believe you will find very entertaining. And so put it on your calendar. Maybe you could ride your bike there. As our caller from Eastford, maybe he'll be riding his bike out there. I don't know what the weather's going to be like this weekend. I don't think it's going to be perfect around here. What do you think?
Yeah, no, it's there's some predictions of rain here. I can tell you a little more specifically.
There are, but you know, if you you can always, you know, drive partway, park your car, and then ride your bike there just to kind of check it out, so you'd be part of the whole cycling experience. But you could also, I suppose you could just drive there and check it out. But it is just a really cool thing. There are some great photos online at the NewEnglandBuildersBall.com. You can check out some of the great photos they have, looking at one of Richard Sack's cyclocross bikes. Richard's an interesting guy. Maybe I'll have to see if I can pin down Richard or Peter and get them onto the show one of these days. They're fascinating. They've been in the bike industry as long as I've been in the bike industry, which makes us all a bunch of old farts, but that's okay. And they build some of the most beautiful bicycles you've ever seen, and they're all hand-built, and there's a history with them. They came from a background of, they were actually sent over to England to a company called Whitcomb in England. And Whitcomb was building hand-built custom frames. And Peter and Richard both went over there to learn how to build frames. And they got their apprenticeship there. And then when they came back here to the U.S., they worked for a company, I think it was called Sports East, if I remember correctly. And it was down in Haddam, Connecticut. And they were actually building Whitcomb USA bicycles. If you've never seen a Whitcomb USA bike, they're rare. There aren't a lot of them out there. Both Peter and Richard built them. They're really cool. I know that there is one at our local bike shop because I was involved with getting that in his hands. So that's kind of a neat thing. They are, again, hand-built frames, either out of Reynolds or Columbus tubing. I think that there's also some True Temper bikes out there. There's a number of different types of high-quality chrome mollies that they are building their frames out of. And the lug work is just, it's impeccable. It's gorgeous. They do a tremendous job. But anyway, they ended up both going out on their own eventually and starting their own companies. And one is J.P. Weigel, which is Peter Weigel, and the other is Richard Sack Cycles, and that's Richard's company. There were a number of builders back in those days because really our bikes were all steel back then. And I am talking about the back then I'm referring to is the 70s and early 80s. So there were a few other builders that came out of there. One of them was, I think he worked there briefly, and that was a gentleman by the name of Chris Chance, who grew up right here in Storrs, Connecticut. And he went on to form a company called Fat City Cycles because he was building hand-built, high-quality mountain bicycles. And Chris did some cool stuff because he really took his road bike knowledge and put it into the mountain bike. And all of a sudden, mountain bikes, which used to be very slow and sluggish and, you know, in my world, kind of more like a cruiser and kind of not really that much fun to ride, especially if you're trying to ride it uphill. He put some road bike geometry into that, a little bit of a mix of both, and all of a sudden we had fast mountain bikes, and that was cool. That was definitely a cool thing. And they all kind of came out of this Connecticut builders mecca, and also the Boston builders mecca. There's a lot of people building in Boston still to this day. Some of them building very specialty-oriented bicycles. So anyway, the New England Builders Ball, remember, it is at the Thompson Speedway. It is this weekend. It is Friday evening, and it begins at 7 p.m. at the Thompson Motor Speedway, Thompson Motorsports Park in Thompson, Connecticut, and it is at the barn at the Speedway, September 30th, 2016. Check it out. Check out the KMC CrossFest. Best cross racing in the country will be there, right there. The best riders in the country will be there. National champions. There will also be people probably coming over from Europe to race there. It's a really great, great weekend for cycling here. So anyway, I'm about to wrap this up. You have been listening to 91.7 WHUS, Storrs, Connecticut, and you're listening to Bicycle Talk, and where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and of course our bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or would like to contribute, you can call or text us at 860-486-9487, or if you're listening to this on podcast, you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. My name is Ron Meniza. I am here with my co-host, Fran Storch. Thank you so much for listening. I will be back in 2 weeks. We will have an encore show next week because Fran and I are traveling. Thank you very much for listening.